You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to hug you, Doctor, if I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give you information, asking for help, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Common Sense Show. I'm your host, Dave Hodges, and we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. We have a very, very informative show. I'd like to say terrific, but some of the news coming out isn't terrific, unless you count shining the light of day on the bad guys is being terrific. So I guess it is terrific. Anyway, in the first hour, in just a moment, we're going to be joined by Scott Bennett. In hour number two, we're going to be joined by Virginia Farber, and we're going to be talking about more details on the new 5G coming out. And I guarantee you haven't heard most of the new stuff coming out. It is frightening beyond belief. And in hour number three, I invited Gary Haven back as we continue our discussion in the evaluation of the Trump administration and how he is doing and the challenges that he is facing. So we have an action-packed show. This hour, we are brought to you by Renaissance Precious Metals. Renaissance Precious Metals provides you with an opportunity to convert your soon-to-be worthless cash into precious metals that will hold its value through any crisis. Give Steve a call tomorrow, Steve Quayle, a call tomorrow at 406-586-4842. Again, that number to call to take advantage of this great service, 406-586-4842. We're also brought to you by PrepareWithDave.com. You know, we used to sell storable food in large volume. 6 months to 2 years is what most experts recommend. A lot of people can't afford that. So what we did is we came up with a four-week supply. It was priced at $250. We've lowered that price to $99. We want to remove as many obstacles as possible to America getting ready for whatever might befall us. And food preparation is on the front line of personal preparation. PrepareWithDave.com. No coupon code needed. Just go to the website, place the order. It's as easy as that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're honored to have Scott Bennett. We've had him on a couple of times before, and he is an American patriot. He is, in my book, a hero, although I know he doesn't call himself that, but that's how I view him. He's a U.S., former U.S. Special Operations Officer, Global Psychological Warfare Counterterrorism Analyst, and former defense contractor with Booz Allen Hamilton. He's worked at the highest levels of government and counterterrorism, including Special Operations Command, U.S. Central Command, State Department Coordinator for Counterterrorism, and other agencies. He served in the G.W. Bush administration from 03 to 08. He's also the author of a book we're going to highly recommend tonight, Shell Game, which is the betrayal and cover-up by the U.S. government of Union Bank of Switzerland and the terrorist threat and finance connection. And Ed Snowden talked about this, and the leaks with Booz Allen Hamilton and the U.S. Central Command, and it just never stops. We're going to let Scott talk about this. It's absolutely fantastic. It's a whistleblowing report. Extraordinaire. Scott, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Dave, it's always an honor to be with you, my friend. Thank you.
Well, there is so much going on in the world. It's kind of like shoot an arrow up into the air, and we've got a major topic. So I'm going to kind of leave this to you. The first choice, where you think things emanate from, where would you like to start?
Well, I think, you know, it's good to always start with the Shell Game origination, the book, the report, and people can go up and get it at shellgamewhistleblower.com. That's the website, shellgamewhistleblower.com, and they can go to lulu.com, the publisher, lulu.com, and just type Shell Game by Scott Bennett. I tell people to go to Lulu because Amazon took the book down, and then I think some CIA or Mossad people have put it back up because they're charging like $50 for it, whereas I put it up for cost at Lulu. So People should always go there, lulu.com, and just Google Shell Game by Scott Bennett. And that book, that report, really was written on a typewriter in federal prison, in the military, and it was a whistleblowing report that listed the Swiss bank terrorist financing connection to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton State Department, before any of this Uranium One stuff started coming out. So the shell game that Clinton and Obama and the Clinton State Department, the Clinton Foundation, were playing with Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer and Loretta Lynch at the Department of Justice, all of this started occurring in 2009 when she just came into the Secretary of State position. So this was her first activity of treason, I would say, and it's not really been exposed for whatever reason by Fox News, Hannity, Tucker, Laura Ingraham, any of these people. I suspect it's going to come out because you can't stop Old Faithful from blowing, and it's been blowing and gassing ever since. And the American people are becoming aware of it. I've done a lot of interviews about it, and it's all verifiable. All the documents are there. You can trace it. Nothing's made up. And nothing I ever say is made up or classified because I was there. I was in the heart of the State Department. I was in the heart of U.S. Special Operations Command in Washington, D.C., as well as MacDill Air Force Base, Florida. I worked under Dove Zakheim, my boss at Booz Allen Hamilton, who was also the comptroller at the Pentagon when 9/11 was hit by the missile that hit the skiff of the Navy analysts that were looking at money. So I found myself right in the middle of a lot of this. And, you know, I started reporting and I started investigating, and I was thrown in prison by the Obama administration on totally trumped up charges. But it was, little did I know that that was sort of the beginning of an odyssey that I would find out 9/11 was a hoax, was a false flag. And I would also find Brad Birkenfeld, who had all of these 19,000 bank accounts that were being used to fund terrorism from Syria to Libya to Iraq. To all over the Middle East and really facilitate the exodus of migrants and economic refugees into Europe as well. These are wealthy Saudi Arabian foundations and donors of the Wahhabi Muslim Sunni ideology. And that is really the Islamic flavor that is the most violent, intolerant, vicious, boy raping, women acid in the face throwing savagery. And Americans really can need to learn that, need to quicken themselves so they can differentiate between the Alawites and the Shia and all of the other sects of Islam, because the Saudi Arabians really are the worst. And it's not just me. People like Tulsi Gabbard and Senator Dick Black and others are coming out, talking about this. So it's exciting times because all the material is starting to come out, and I think it's going to come out even more.
As an American voter and taxpaying citizen, let me tell you where my main concern with Hillary Clinton lies. And that's the fact that her ill-gotten gains, be whatever they may be with the Clinton Foundation, came from many foreign sources, you know, the pay for play and so forth. How is it that she's able to get away with the fact that she laundered that money in the Clinton Foundation that she again laundered into her campaign? Isn't that illegal?
Well, absolutely. Clinton in the Clinton. Remember, she came in as the Secretary of State. She came in a key position that basically was, you know, like the banker at a casino table in Vegas. You know, all these countries would come and cash in the chips, and she would, you know, pay them. She would give them licenses for weapons. She would give them all sorts of benefits. So Hillary Clinton was in a key position, and she sold and marketed the influence of the United States, and that's where Shell Game came about. She threw the whistleblower, Brad Birkenfeld, in prison to confiscate these 19,000 bank accounts and the hundreds of millions of dollars. And we've reported it to the members of Congress, Trey Gowdy, Saxby Chambliss, Devin Nunes. I wrote a memo to Trump in December of 2017, and I also was on the phone with Michael Cohen, Trump's attorney, and briefed him personally on a lot of this stuff. And I think that's one of the main reasons why they were surveying him, because it wasn't just me, it was Paul Preston and others that were on the recorded phone calls with Michael Cohen, briefing him and his staff all about this stuff before Trump was president in 2015 and 2016. So when you're, all of the intel is out there.
When you're talking about Paul Preston, are you talking about Paul Preston of Agenda 21 Radio?
Yep, exactly. Paul Preston is a great guy, and he's been, like you, Dave, has been a stalwart patriot that has been fearlessly proclaiming all of this truth. You know, that's what is going to really, I think, awaken and revolutionize our country. Our leaders like you behind the alternative media who have a platform that are giving this to Americans. You're giving them raw, unpolished, pure intelligence from people that have been there, that aren't politically correct, that aren't looking for you know, any sort of a special job or money or anything like that. They're doing it out of duty. So you're, in a sense, you're on a military mission as well. You're in part of the information operations. And perhaps that's why Hillary Clinton feared the alternative media and called them, like Dianne Feinstein, people that are, you know, in an information war against the deep state establishment.
Yeah, I recall that well. I know a few of the things that Paul Preston and the New California Group briefed the president's people on. Some of that still held closely to the vest because of ongoing concerns, but a lot of it had to do with deep state activity in California. How much do you know about the CalExit movement, Eric Holder's role, Loretta Lynch's role, and their attempted breakup in the United States, starting with California? Are you familiar with that at all?
Well, you know, one of the values and the benefits that I received when I was in prison was I was tutored and taught by the best lawyers in the country. Some of these guys went to Princeton. They were friends with Johnny Cochran. I was one of the few guys who could type. So I worked with lawyers on developing motions and legal arguments, and I learned the law really in the best law school you could go to. So I learned the law, and it began to help me triangulate what was happening with the people in the Obama administration, in the Department of Justice, Eric Holder, Lanny Brewer, Loretta Lynch, working in tangents with Hillary Clinton. And then we see all this expanding in the last couple of years with Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Ginny Ree, who worked at the Clinton Foundation. So there's all sorts of conflicts of interests, and you know, it's like a game of musical chairs. These people have sat in the Brad Birkenfeld Swiss Bank musical chair that was covered in red paint, and they're easy to identify because they get a big mark on their behind. And all of these people can't go anywhere. And we see them flying out to California and this Brexit, the CalExit thing. I think California, run by Holder and Jerry Brown and Xavier Becerra, is an indication of how they're trying to secede from the union, really. And Paul Preston has created, with a lot of others, a new California movement, which is a legitimate legal constitutional splitting of California like West Virginia and Virginia did. And it's along constitutional lines. We're allowed to do it as members of the union. You simply vote on, you know, the creation of a new state in your own California legislature, and it can happen. And we see the same thing happening in California now is what happened in West Virginia in the 1800s preceding the Civil War, because the California governor and legislature are refusing to abide by federal laws. There's a lawsuit that's been filed by the Department of Justice and the Trump administration against California, essentially saying you're in a state of rebellion, and they're challenging the Supremacy Clause. And we know that from their ICE laws that they're passing, which are totally unconstitutional, and trying to prohibit American citizens from communicating to federal agencies about illegal foreign invaders, which is a violation of the Constitution's right to petition the government for the redress of grievances. That's the key word. Petitioning the government for the redress of grievances includes filing official communications and attachments and supplements, which include evidence and material that the ICE agents and others may be looking for. That's being stopped by the California legislature and governor because they're threatening to fine American Californians for doing that. So, and they're also passing laws that make it illegal to write or publish anything that helps to therapeutically aid people to come out of homosexual activities, homosexual lifestyles and stuff, which a lot of Christian organizations do that. I know Family Research Council and many others in Washington did that. And, you'd had, you know, friends of, you know, parents of homosexuals and things like that. So they're all legitimate agencies that seek to counsel and help people that are looking to get out of that lifestyle. That in California, that's now being branded as an illegal business practice. So there's some very terrible things that are happening in the state that I think are drawing a line in the sand and causing many people in California to say to themselves, do we want to be on the side of the traitors and those committing treason against the federal government? Do we want to stand on the side of the losing group? Because we know it. The rebellion always loses. We saw that in 1865. Or do we side with the federal government and say, we're not going to go the way of California. We're declaring a new California, stand with the president, the federal government. I think the majority of Californians are going to go with the latter. And I could see Trump and the administration taking some very draconian movement to dissolve much of the California government if it does not get in line, if it does not maintain the supremacy clause and the obedience to the federal government with regards to some of these things. We all know some of the federal laws are a little bit out of whack, but you have to go through the legal process to determine that. You can't just say, we're not going to follow this, we're not going to follow that, and we're not going to, give any information to federal agencies regarding foreign invaders. We're going to give foreign invaders access and citizenship to California. They can't do that. So we find ourselves really in a state of rebellion. And, that's again where I come in, knowing that Shell Game and our work with Brad Birkenfeld, we found out Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer and Loretta Lynch, the Department of Justice crowd, were working with Covington & Burling, a law firm that incidentally represents Michael Flynn right now. And we've informed the president that Covington & Burling should be disqualified from representing Michael Flynn, as well as Michael Flynn's plea deal should be thrown out, because Covington & Burling is a party to this terrorist financing and treasonous activities. So the law is a very interesting sword to wield. When you understand how to wield it, you can really do some damage to the deep state, and that's what I'm looking forward to doing.
Yeah, I've done a lot of work with Paul Preston on the very things that you've just mentioned. And one of the things that has both Paul and I concerned is the fact that there are so many groups involved in the CalExit movement, from George Soros to financial interests out of China and the various terrorist groups. And I know that you know a lot about terrorism. How concerned should we be about groups like MS-13, ISIS, the weapons bust of a few days ago in Southern California? I mean, tie all that together for us. Where should America be concerned about with regard to these groups?
Well, Dave, if we put on our psychological hat, if we put on our medicinal hat, our therapeutic counselor's hat, we see California as a population, and our young people in California, as well as for the variety of, all the rest of the states and the young people and stuff in this country. But if we look at California, this state, and I've lived here all my life until I went to Washington in the military in 1998, but I came back here afterwards. But this state is suffering a schizophrenic emotional meltdown. This state has suffered for 25 years of political correctness in the school systems, a soft, fuzzy, there is no truth in the schools, in the universities. We see Antifa and this liberal fascism, which is outlawing conservative speech and impulses with a vicious hatred that I've never seen before. So California is really in meltdown, and quickening that meltdown is the notion that we're a great hodgepodge, multicultural state, and somehow having a million different colors and cultures and languages adds to the quickening and the facilitation of prosperity and networks and efficiency. And it doesn't contribute to efficiency; it contributes to dysfunction. If you have 1,000 different people in here talking 1,000 different languages and having independent cultural affirmations, and no one calls themselves an American, no one calls themselves a Californian, then you're just an island with a bunch of, like Lord of the Flies. And I think in California, we see this with a lot of the Hispanic immigrant groups, the La Raza, the Fronteras, Pueblos Sin Fronteras, Towns Without Frontiers, or Borders. We see California in a meltdown, and I see, yeah, it's a good state. They're surfing. You've got a lot of beautiful things about the state. You've got good people. You've got a lot of libertarians and conservative Republicans too. But for the most part, our government in California has been hijacked, and Paul says it really well in his grievances that they're laying out every week. The government's been hijacked by this Maoist monoparty system that seeks to run the state from Los Angeles, kind of like Washington seeking to run the rest of the country from Washington, D.C. So I think Californians are in a state of breaking out of this federalism in California and reverting back to almost a city-state mentality. And I don't mean to describe it as a devolution or a civil war in California, but in one sense, it really is turning into that. You've got, you know, areas in Oakland and areas in San Francisco and areas elsewhere that are out of sync and are not morally similar to some of the different parts of the rural areas of California. And people are tired also of the tax burden and the oppression of and the large government expenditures. You're running businesses out of California. So it's like a machine that's breaking down slowly. The parts are breaking down. There's less and less oil in the machine, and there's an increase in hostility and oppression by these government actors, as well as laws that are, I think, completely immoral, that are suffocating the moral impulse, like, you know, the homosexual agenda from Gavin Newsom in San Francisco, trying to oppress that on the whole state, trying to pass these laws like AB 2943, which outlaws any book or any publication or any service or any church from talking about therapeutic help for people that want to come out of the homosexual activity. That's just a sign of it, as well as the gun confiscations and the paranoia and hysteria about guns, and trying to outlaw them, trying to confiscate them, trying to threaten people like some of these politicians that have been on Fox and elsewhere, who are, you know, trying to get everything registered. I think all of this points to a California that is changing very, very rapidly, and could see large portions breaking away and having a mini civil war in California. I can't see too much around that.
Yeah, that's where I was going with this. But I think the civil war could be exacerbated by some of these terrorist groups, for lack of a better term, that are in California right now. Paul is concerned, as am I, from what I've learned, that violence could be an intentional strategy for the CalExit people to force departure from the union. Do you see it that way too?
Well, yeah, it's always a tool of warfare. It's part of the chaos and the it's part of an information operation. You have to, you know, the CIA were good at it back in the Rodney King protests and things were happening back in the 90s, if you recall. I think it was, what was it, 93 or 4 or something like that. The CIA I remember, get people out of jail, give them a car with guns and stuff in the trunk, drive out to Compton and places like that, Watts, and where you had predominantly black areas that were very economically depressed and, you know, gang areas, and just distribute weapons. And they did it for just violent, to gain their own power, of course, because you have to have chaos in order to justify police action and police budgets and stuff. So I would think very easily they could foment unrest, violence, they could foment, you know, tribalism and, you know, a lot of things that may seek to trigger, I think, blacks against Hispanics. I think that really is the fault line, is that racial tension is much more explosive than the white population in California, because the whites are a little bit better armed. They're a little bit more temperamentally equipped for, you know, combat situations than the suppressed, intellectually suppressed and economically suppressed minority population. So they're the target for for rallying and creating a sense of outrage. So I think they could revert to using violence to foment, you know, problems. So they could usher in, again, a civil war. Martial law is a good term for it, using the police state. But again, Cal exit is not going to happen, because I think with Donald Trump in office and the majority of Californians recognizing the writings on the wall, all the good people in California are going to side with the president and side with the feds and the federal government. And they very easily could come into California. Like, remember the movie Valkyrie?
Well, yes.
With Tom Cruise, Operation Valkyrie could be what Trump implements in California, except they don't lose. They go in, they remove everybody who needs to be removed. They arrest them for treason, violating federal law, traitors, whatever the language is, similar to what was done in the Civil War in 1861, 62, 63, except I think it would be lightning fast. And that's the one thing that people have suspected Jeff Sessions may be part of that, you know, operation now. As much as I'm very disappointed in many respects of Sessions, I always hold out hope that you know, Trump is operating, as Paul has said too, with a four-dimensional chess attitude. But we have to drive, you know, help drive him forward and help encourage him to take command of the federal government. Trump doesn't really understand the federal government because he's never been in government. I know exactly what needs to be done, and that is getting a Inspector General Czar to control all the other Inspector Generals, who are essentially the miners that can go into the agencies and absorb and take the documents and the materials for waste, fraud, and abuse, and then hand it over to a Department of Justice for prosecution. And the Inspector General can instantly investigate people, investigate departments, freeze them, suspend them, fire them from their position, relocate them, detail them to other things, take people off of high-level national security, top-secret level stuff, and put them in the basement to sharpen pencils. That's the power of the Inspector General. If they protest, tough. You're suspended until further notice. But the President of the United States has absolute authority and power over every federal government agency, and Trump needs to really act upon that and investigate and expose where a lot of these deep state operatives are, and specifically in Brennan CIA. I know the drill. They get these guys, they put them in as political appointees, then they make them GS level employees. And once they're in the GS level, they think they can't be fired, but they can. So Trump needs to do a full-on Inspector General examination of all these agencies and provide it with the Congress at the same time. Why Trump, or why the Department of Justice has been dragging its feet and the FBI has been dragging its feet and giving it intelligence and documents to the Congress is beyond me, because Donald Trump can walk into the FBI and the Department of Justice as the commander-in-chief with the highest security clearance in the country, and he can say, I want to see everything that the House wants. Put it in front of me right now. And they have to put it in front of him. Then he takes it in his backpack and he says, thank you, I'm declassifying all of this. And he walks over and he gives it to Devin Nunes and says, investigate this, have hearings on this, and prosecute the people for it, or recommend to me prosecution for it, as well as hiring, the second, counsel. Trump is in a great position, and I'm disappointed that he's not being as hyper aggressive as he should be, because this is a war. These people are never going to like him. They're going to try and kill him as quickly as they can, politically and maybe even real, physically. But he is never going to make them like him, and he's got to get his domestic house in order quickly. And it seems to be, you know, everything's falling apart that they tried to do with him. Andrew McCabe in the whole FBI Department of Justice thing. I've got a story there, and I don't want to go on too long if you want to touch on other things. But there's a huge story about Andrew McCabe that hasn't even really exploded yet about what they try to do to Senator Dick Black. And when that gets out and Senator Dick Black is called to testify about it, it'll blow your mind. It shows you just how insidious and wicked these people were when they were in the Department of Justice. They thought they could get away with all the stuff they did, but thankfully Trump was elected president, and now they're being caught up by their own petard. They're being hung by their own gallows.
Well, what happened to the senator?
Well, Senator Dick Black, as we know, is one of the few voices. He's a state senator from Virginia, and he's been a leading voice. He's briefed Dulcy Gabbard and educated her, and he was a former United States Marine Corps officer, lieutenant colonel. He was an aviator. He was in Vietnam. He also is a strong conservative. I knew him back when I was in Washington, D.C., and he's been to Family Research Council and given a lot of lectures. And Senator Black was one of the leading voices that went over to Syria and thanked President Bashar Assad for protecting Christians. And he's very well versed in terrorism in the intelligence sectors. And he knows and has said, and I interview him every month or so just to give him an intel briefing. He has said Saudi Arabia is our enemy, not Iran, not Russia, Saudi Arabia. And Israel is part of the problem. So Saudi Arabia and Israel and the Sunni Wahhabists are our enemies. And the CIA and the FBI and the Department of Justice and the military have been on the side of these fanatics. So Senator Black was firing firecrackers up into the sky, and it was lighting everything up, and they hated him for it. Well, here's what happened. Andrew McCabe, when he was in the FBI, had assigned four FBI agents to go to Senator Black's office and tell him, we need your help getting a journalist out of prison in Syria. They're being held by the Syrian government, or you need to talk with this Syrian group, talk to this group to talk to that group. And what Senator Black essentially said was, well, I'm happy to help. I'm happy to talk to anybody as long as they're not terrorists. Well, what the reality was, Dave, the group that Andrew McCabe's FBI were trying to have Senator Black talk to was, in fact, a terrorist group. And Senator Black smelled a trap, and he said, I'm not talking to anybody who's a terrorist, and I'm not having anything to do with you. So he didn't take the bait. He didn't get involved. And what was going to happen was Andrew McCabe were going to try and tar Senator Black with having an affiliation with a terrorist group. They were going to leak that to Jill McCabe, his wife, Andrew McCabe's wife, who was running against Senator Black because Terry McAuliffe had given her $695,000 to run against him. Why? Because Andrew McCabe was investigating the Hillary Clinton emails, servers, all of that stuff. So here's your perfect little Bermuda Triangle image of Andrew McCabe and his wife, Jill McCabe, plotting with Terry McAuliffe to use the FBI and use four agents to lure Senator Black into a false terrorist operation so they could tar him and then leak it out and have him lose the election. That is an abuse of the FBI. It's abuse of our agency power. And it really was a conspiracy to, you know, commit fraud and do all sorts of things. That hasn't yet been prosecuted or exposed. I included it in the memo to President Trump. And at the end of the day, Senator Black would testify about exactly what I just told you. And it makes you think, wow. Why isn't this coming out? Why isn't Sean Hannity saying Senator Black's name when he talks about Jill McCabe running for Senate? That's an outrageous, bizarre thing to me that makes me want to kick Hannity in the right place to get his attention to say, don't just say a Senate seat, say Senator McCabe's name when you mention the Senate seat, because then it unleashes a whole avalanche of ideological and other things. There's a whole lot of drama here.
Well, there's a lot of drama. There's a lot of smoke. I'm going to dig into this. The conflicts of interest there are notable. Let me go to a little larger stage and ask you your opinion on something. To me, Comey exposed the Clinton emails and all their criminality. Whether he did anything with them or not is irrelevant. The criminal part of this is out there. What is Trump waiting for? Why isn't she indicted?
The only way that you could calculate it is because of political strategy. He is and his newness and his ignorance, his naivety and inexperience with government, the political timing needs to be right. So I think he has allowed the Department of Justice, Mueller, and the investigations to run their course. Now the House has issued a report saying there was no Russian collusion, there was no Russian involvement in the election with the Trump people. There was no Russian collusion anyway, but they've exonerated the president from any Russian collusion. And now we have this other judge in Virginia say to Mueller, quote, come on, man, about you're trying to lump Manafort into a political Russian investigation, but yet you're charging him with things that have nothing to do with your original mandate. You know, you can't be saying I'm going to go look for oranges and then say I found watermelons and I'm going to prosecute him for watermelons. You can't do that. You can only prosecute him for oranges. So all of these things are starting to sort of run out of gas, and perhaps now the season of prosecuting and filing charges against Clinton is going to happen. I mean, it's not for lack of progress on or will on our part. I've been in touch with Tom Fitton and Judicial Watch. I've met with Larry Klayman. I've provided everything that I've done, and I've provided it to members of Congress and investigators in the Senate, and videotaped these calls and put them on YouTube. I've had senators say, don't put him through, for whatever reason. So they're aware this is toxic radioactive stuff. And Trump has it now too. The question is, when's he going to load it into his gun and start opening fire on these people? I think and hope soon. The other thing is the deep state distraction with regards to Syria and Russia and Iran and North Korea. All of this foreign policy stuff has taken Trump into, you know, a different direction. Now he's capitalized wonderfully on the North Korea situation. I think his peace deal with North and South Korea is a wonderful grand slam that he should be praised for, even though he didn't necessarily have all sorts of things to do with it. It sort of fell into his lap. Yeah, he did exercise pressure, and he went, you know, kind of used the madman card to waken them up. And I think he's doing the same thing with Iran, with Bolton and Nikki Haley and everybody threatening war with Iran. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it would be the stupidest thing he could do, because he'd probably be impeached or lose the election if he did engage in a serious war. Because Russia and Iran and China wouldn't stand for it. I don't think they're going to stand for any more regime change because of all the chaos. Look what happened to Europe. And yeah, we're kind of flying all over the globe and talking about different subjects, but you know, this has been like a bag of popcorn, Dave, that's been popping all over the place. We've had Libya pop. James and Joanne Moriarty, who were in Libya, telling us this story about all the stuff that they went through in Libya. We've had Syria pop and fall apart. All of this was happening under Obama's administration, mind you. Hillary Clinton, Victoria Nuland, John Kerry, Barack Obama, John Brennan. The Arab Spring was taken off in 2008, and that was a big psyop to cultivate rebellion and break down the borders of these Islamic countries. But all this stuff has been exploding, and the rest of the world is sick and tired of it. I can't imagine how Europe hasn't kicked out every single American embassy from its land because of what we have done to Europe. The United States has destroyed these nations, and all these migrants and refugees have jumped on rubber dinghies and taken backpacks and marched up into Germany and Britain and Sweden and caused absolute chaos, rape and pillaging. That's the fault of the United States. We were in charge of Europe's security. That's what happened after World War II. What the hell didn't we stand up and stop this? The only thing you could say is we were planning it. We were a part of it. We were working with Soros, working with Obama, Hillary Clinton to do this. So all this chaos, you know, all this flesh-eating disease has gone up into Europe. And the question is, are they going to break apart into civil war states? Are they going to reject the entire European Union and come back to almost a dark age? I could see that happening too. I could see them siding with Russia, because Russia is the only Christian country that seems to be really trying to preserve Christian Europe and preserve Christian people in Syria. Senator Black has said, we've done more damage to Christians than any other country. We've done more, America has done more damage to Christians in the Middle East than any Muslim nation. That's a profound, obscene, blood-soaked handprint on the face of our reputation. And, you know, it's inescapable. It's mathematically and historically verifiable. You can't get around it. There's no opinion. We look at the facts and the evidence of what we've done, and it's been absolutely destructive. So it's a long way of saying I hope Trump really gets serious and recognizes the American people put him into office to stop all of that. The American people took Trump, put him in as president because no one else had the manhood, the masculine presence of mind, as well as the independent maverick spirit, or at least the image of such. They put him in office to stop all of this stuff. And now he's dancing and dallying or being a puppet to some of these deep state operatives or Bolton or all of these Zionist neocons that are pushing him to continue to double down on the attacking Syria, when Syria is probably the best organization, the best government that we could have, and Saudi Arabia is the worst. And then we see these false chemical attacks. We've seen Trump, and incidentally, Trump's government is now allegedly not going to be funding. This came out on Sputnik News. And I always encourage people, if you really want to get a well-rounded perspective on the world's news, go to Sputnik.com, go to RT.com, go to PressTV.com, and you'll get American news commentators and analysts talking right from their heart. That's what I do when I'm on Press TV or on RTV. They say, can you comment on this? They don't tell me what to say, and I tell the truth, as does Jim Fetzer and Kevin Barrett and all sorts of other people from Veterans Today that are regulars on Sputnik, RT, and Press TV. But the U.S. is halting the funding to the White Helmets. So Trump may have a redeeming moment because the White Helmets is a MI6, MI5, Mossad operation, Saudi operation. That's all propaganda, and they were responsible for this whole chemical false flag attack in Syria that, quote, triggered or provoked Trump to fire missiles into Syria, which I think is a blunder. I think it gave us a very bad stain on our reputation. The whole world looked at us like, wait a minute, you're rushing to declare war against Syria, and that's what firing missiles is. It's a declaration of war. You're rushing to fire missiles at Syria before you even tested the ground. And now we found out the White Helmets are behind it, so Trump is allegedly halting the funding. Well, he needs to do a lot more than that. He needs to get off that train because picking a war, continuing escalating of the hostilities against Russia and Iran is going to have a negative blowback because no one in America really wants it. No one wants a war with Iran or Russia. The Soviet Union is not there. The Cold War is not there. There is no Russian red menace scare anymore, except in the minds of John McCain and Lindsey Graham and these other parasites who live off of the military-industrial complex. There is no problem with Russia, and there's really no problem with Iran. They're not these violent, savage, murderous people that we've been led to believe largely by, I think, a lot of the Zionist media that is on the side of trying to disintegrate all of these nations in the Middle East for Netanyahu's grand design of expanding, you know, the Greater Israel Project or whatever it may be classified as. That's not what the American people want. So I hope Trump goes back to following what do the American people want, what's on their hearts, and makes that his policy and gets back to that not isolationist, but make normalizing relations with Russia and getting us off the regime change war horse.
I think the American people want to see Hillary Clinton prosecuted above all else.
Yeah.
That's where I'd say their number one priority is. That's the feedback that comes to me. There's a whole lot of other people. I mean, like Podesta, Wasserman, Schultz. I mean, we go down the list here. No shortage of crimes. But I think Hillary is there. The question I have, though, and this is all speculative, Scott, but I don't ever think she'll see a courtroom, even if Trump and Sessions were so inclined. because she sits at the deep state and government intersection, they're never going to let her testify.
Yeah, I think they'd kill her. I think you're exactly right. I think they would, they would remove her. Here's the interesting thing too, Dave, is you have all sorts of lawsuits being filed. Like the Democrat National Committee has filed a lawsuit against Trump and the Russians, right? That's a wonderful opportunity to do reverse discovery and do a counter lawsuit. So now you can introduce evidence and testimony from all sorts of experts and witnesses and people that have material, evidence, videos, and other things that can be introduced into court of law as part of the discovery and part of the countersuit that says things like, we want Ray McGovern and Bill Binney and other experts to testify that Seth Rich was the WikiLeaks leaker of the Clinton Podesta emails, and it was downloaded from the Democrat servers. It was not hacked by Russia, and we can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. We're going to introduce that. We're going to introduce Debbie Wasserman Schultz's role with the Arwan brothers and the murder of Seth Rich. We're going to have WikiLeaks and Julian Assange testify to this. We're going to have Julian Assange testify to the WikiLeaks that Brad Birkenfeld had brought over about State Department diamonds in the toothpaste and Hillary Clinton's role in these 19,000 bank accounts and Edward Snowden's role as a CIA operative targeting Birkenfeld in Switzerland. And Snowden's role with Scott Bennett at Booz Allen Hamilton. We're going to bring these four guys together and see how their stories fit together. And these things need to happen, can happen, and when it's put together, it'll have nuclear fusion. I know it's complicated for people if they haven't lived it and done it, but that's our task, is to explain it very simply and say Hillary Clinton was in a key position. She did all this. Eric Holder did it. Barack Obama did it. John Brennan did it. Here's the book Shell Game that detailed it from 2012. Incidentally, they paid $104 million to silence Birkenfeld on September 11th, 2012, the same day they had Benghazi. So these events were, one was a deception operation. The other one, payoff of Birkenfeld, was the real event they wanted to cover up. But Benghazi, and the assassination of Chris Stevens and the 52 shoulder fired missiles that were back to Turkey at the time. All of this stuff, is there for the taking, is there for laying out in a courtroom as a countersuit. And also with Iran, they've just had a judge declare Iran is having to pay $6 billion or something in reparations to 9/11 families. Well, there's another opportunity for a countersuit and newly discovered evidence that it could expose the entire 9/11 false flag attack. You can come in and all sorts of creative people from Zabrowski to Richard Gage to Jim Fetzer to Kevin Barrett to all sorts of other experts, Barbara Honegger, and people that have accumulated the evidence that shows without a shadow of doubt that the government narrative was impossible and that something else happened. That automatically disproves the whole Iranian notion of having anything to do with 9/11. But let's
Scott,
expose
I agree.
9/11.
I agree with you. I totally agree with what you're saying. But just look at their behavior on the part of the JFK investigation, over 50 years old, and they're still protecting the living co-conspirators. How hard will they fight to keep this from coming out?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the interesting thing, Dave. Some things are worth dying for, and some things are worth having a civil war for. If tyrants are trying to steal the Constitution and oppress you, it's no longer a government. And preserving the Constitution of the United States is the agenda of the American government. It is the agenda of the American people. It may not be the agenda of the deep state. It may not be the agenda of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. But we don't care about their agenda. We're at war with anyone in any government, in any agency, or any media, but specifically the government because they're taxpayer-funded. We are at war with them if they are trying to destroy our Constitution, destroy our constitutional rights, wage false flag attacks as psychological warfare instruments to destabilize our domestic tranquility, whether it's from Las Vegas or Sandy Hook or the Boston bombing or Florida. There's all sorts of evidence out there. Look at Sandy Hook, for example. Fetzer and Wolfgang Halbig have done incredible work on that. Paul Preston has too. We've seen in America something that I never grew up with, and those are these false flag attacks, false flag shooting events that are portrayed by the media as real, but when you do the forensic examination, you find that they're impossible. You find it's all a show.
You're right, and I've raised this question. Why aren't we seeing these in foreign countries? They're an American creation. Scott, we just got a couple of minutes left, and I want you to be able to tell people here in about 90 seconds or less how they can follow your good work, and let's start with Shell Game.
Well, people can go to shellgamewhistleblower.com, and my email's up there, and the Twitter and the Facebook, and people are welcome to email me. And lulu.com is the book, the publisher at, and I'm on Twitter at armypsyop. And I would just say we're going to continue to fight hard, Dave, and it's because you and I and Fetzer and Kevin Barrett and all the other people in the alternative media, Goodman is a good guy I did an interview with. We're all on the same football team, and we need to be continuing to drive forward and inspire Americans to not back down, don't be bullied, don't retreat, but hold the light of truth up. Embrace whistleblowers, because we're blowing the whistle for a reason. Not because we like the sound, but because whistleblowing is what shatters these glass walls that they try and imprison the American public within. So we're going to continue to whistleblow and be loud. And Shell Game is like the jawbone of an ass that people can take and slay a thousand Philistines. Take the Shell Game book and present it to members of Congress and demand that they do something about it. Demand they give an answer, or their failure or refusal gives you the answer. They're not worthy of the power. You need to run against them or find someone who will. But that's the purpose of this Shell Game report, is to empower people with a weapon that they can take to every member of Congress, every member of a town council, anybody in government, anybody even their church too, and say, what do you have to say about this? What are you going to do about this? Because we have to hold people accountable, starting with ourselves.
Amen to that. In fact, it's going to be my pleasure and privilege to help you promote this book on our site, because you just gave us an action plan. And that was going to be my last question, and you just answered it. And you're right on the money with this. I mean, this gives people documentable proof to engage in an action plan that's already underway. Boy, we got to do this again, Scott, because we could do another hour. Do you know, I'm doing YouTube broadcasts now, and some of them end up here and some of them don't. But I'm going to be in contact with you, because there's just too much good coming out. Look, we got to scoot. We're at the end of the hour. But Scott Bennett, you have my deepest respect and appreciation for coming on here. Thank you for all the work you do for America.
God bless you. Thank you so much, Dave. It's been an honor.
The honor's ours, my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in hour number two with Virginia Farvard. You're not going to want to miss this interview.